We've got a big show planned for you. We are going to be joined by sports attorney Dan Luss to talk about a lot of different things, including the situation with Deshaun Watson. Also, we're going to have Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports. He wrote an article about the dead period in college recruiting is going to end June the 1st. We'll get his take on that, the impact he thinks that will have. We're also going to bring you some comments from Gene Wojciechowski. We had him on Golf Talk last night talking about the Masters, but it was so good we're going to bring you that as well. And also, Vince Ferrara had an interview with Paul Biancardi. We've only been able to run part one of that. We're going to run part two of that conversation. He always does a terrific job. He is a national basketball recruiting director for ESPN. Vince Ferrara, how are you doing?
I am good, Jimmy. Glad to be here. Always appreciate the opportunity to talk some sports with you.
Well, glad to have you. And we've got so much to cover. We'll jump to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. So the Lady Vols get the win in softball yesterday, 8-0. Ashley Rogers has her sixth shutout of the year. It was only five innings. She gave up one hit. Kiki Malloy had a three-run home run to help put that game away. Also with Tennessee football, so here's the schedule for the week. They're going to practice today at about 4 o'clock, and then at 6:30, at 6:30, Rodney Garner, and a defensive line coach, and offensive line coach Glenn Ellerby will be joining a Zoom. Wednesday, no practice, but there will be players available at 6. Thursday, a practice at 3:55, and then an assistant coach available later. Saturday at 10 a.m., there will be a scrimmage. It is closed. Josh Heupel, though, will meet with the media later that day. So that's the schedule for Tennessee football. Samika Randall Lang is named the head coach at Winthrop. They removed the interim tag. She was an associate head coach in 2019, the interim in 2020. Last year wasn't a very good year, but still they rewarded her by taking that interim tag off. They were 6-18, 5-15 in the Big South. Previously, she had been the head coach at Ohio, where she was 50-112. She was also the head coach at Alabama A&M. Mel Kiper has changed his draft. What is it, like his eighth mock draft? He's got Trevor Lawrence 1, Zach Wilson at 2, Mac Jones at 3, going to San Francisco. Then he has Kyle Pitts slotted at the 4 spot. Then Penei Sewell at number 5. He's the offensive lineman from Oregon. Trey Lance from North Dakota State at number 6. Number 7, Jamar Chase from LSU. Number 8, Devontae Smith of Alabama. And then he's got Micah Parsons at number 9. Justin Fields going to New England at number 10 in a trade with the Dallas Cowboys. Vince, do you think Justin Fields will be around that long?
I don't. I think there's some – I think the way NFL front offices work, they're putting out information in hopes of Justin Fields sliding and then someone coming up that really loves him and wants to put some bad words out about him to where people think he's going to slip, and then someone will either grab him in their spot or make a move for him. So, no, I don't think he'll get to 10.
I don't either. And here's something that I wanted to ask you about this. So Cincinnati has acquired tight end Thaddeus Moss. He's reuniting with Joe Burrow. Moss is the son of Randy Moss, and I don't exactly know where they acquired him from, but he's going to Cincinnati. I've seen some mock drafts that have the Miami Dolphins trying to draft either Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle. What do you think of NFL teams trying to reunite players from college that had success, like Mac Jones with those receivers or Joe Burrow with Thaddeus Moss or even a Jamar Chase? I don't think the Bengals can get him. But what do you think about teams trying to reunite what looked like pretty good pass-catch combinations from college?
I'm fine with it. I think there's been opportunities for that to happen, Jimmy, and a lot of times those don't materialize. There's typically, especially once you get past like Trevor Lawrence in this draft, you're going to have people that have different opinions, and then ultimately someone's going to have to make the final call. The coach may like one guy, the GM may like somebody else, the owner may say we need to take a quarterback of the future, and then you have to figure it out. And I, you know, like for Miami, for example, it would not surprise me if they have the Alabama receivers right in front of them and then they go Jamar Chase instead from LSU because they're trying to evaluate the entire player versus just that camaraderie with the player they had in college. With a Thaddeus Moss, who I guess I don't think was drafted, right? That's a little bit different. Then you don't have as much to lose. But in those situations, I think you take the best player because the best player is going to be able to work regardless of who's throwing the ball or who is he's catching the ball from, who's going to be catching the ball. So I think they're going to evaluate them as players and not try to do too much of that. But if it works out, I think it's fine.
I just wonder if you think if it's a coin toss between Ja'Marr Chase and Devontae Smith and you're Miami, do you take Smith? Or if you're Cincinnati, do you take Chase? When you think it's pretty even.
Well, but even to who? See, that's the thing.
Well, but no, don't change my argument now, darn it. It's even to Cincinnati. They think Chase is as good as Smith. They have him rated even at Cincinnati. Miami has him rated even. So would you, if you were those teams, would you take the guy that played with him in college if you rated those players even?
If in your scenario, yes. If I rated them even, I would go with the player that they're familiar with in college. But all I meant is that maybe one person views them as even, maybe the head coach does for that reason, but then the GM does not. So then it wouldn't come down to that being even and going with who they played with in college. That's the tough thing. You have to decide and you have to figure out with each organization who makes that final call, and they may not view it that way.
You messing with my hypotheticals, Vince.
I didn't answer it, though. I just gave you a long-winded addition to it.
A few of the notes out there. ESPN came out with this Football Power Index, and I think there's some really interesting ratings by them. Okay, they start with Alabama at 1, Oklahoma 2, Clemson 3, Iowa State at 4, ahead of Ohio State at 5. Texas A&M is 6, Georgia 7, 8, Mississippi State. They project them with an 8.3% chance to win the SEC West and win 8 games. I don't know how winning 8 games has you number 8 in the country. Florida at 14, Auburn 16, LSU 18, Ole Miss 22. Does Mississippi State stick out like a sore thumb to you as it does to me?
Absolutely. I don't understand it. Maybe there's a lot of belief in Mike Leach. Maybe it's the pirate in him, and with what Brady and the Bucks did, there's that residual of pirate fever and the dominance of pirates, and maybe that's where they feel like Mississippi State will have success with Mike Leach. I don't think they have the roster for that. I just don't see it. Incredibly difficult division. That one did not make sense to me. And Iowa State's a touch high for me as well.
Yeah, and I really do like their quarterback running back. I think it's a very, very good combination with Brock
good
Purdy.
Defense too.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. I'm sorry, good defense too.
Yeah, and but that coming in, I think that Hall's right. One of the best running backs in the country. But I boy, even without seeing and without knowing who Ohio State's quarterback is going to be, it'd be hard for me not to put Ohio State ahead of Iowa State in that one. So, all right, a few other notes out there. I was reading something on 247, the SEC breakout true freshman for each school, and I just noted two because a lot of them are people that are linemen or whatever that people wouldn't necessarily relate to. But the Tennessee player is running back Jalen Wright. And then at Georgia, cornerback Nylon Green. I mentioned him because Tennessee was among his finalists. Jalen Wright, do you think he will have the biggest impact of the Tennessee true freshman?
I think he is up there, Jimmy. I've been seeing video prior to in practice and seeing him in person on Saturday just kind of verified what I've seen and understood on what he looks like. Mm-hmm. I think he is one of the top candidates for impact freshmen on this team. I think there's a decent amount. We can talk about them later, but I would put him on a short list of impact freshmen on this team.
Yeah. So I saw something else that had 10 prospects who could surge in the NFL draft. They listed a lot of them were non-skilled position people, but one of the 10, Josh Palmer, the former Tennessee receiver, they pointed out they had 33 catches for 475 yards without having good quarterback play, and that he did very well at the Senior Bowl. And John Wilkerson and I talked about earlier, somebody projected him to be the number 60 pick of the draft ahead of Trey Smith. Do you think that is likely to happen?
I would say no, Jimmy, not because I don't believe in Josh Palmer. I think he's skilled. He has a great body. They're right. He didn't have great quarterback play and still had productivity, high point the ball. I think you could do a lot of different things with him at all the different receiver positions. But that wide receiver position in the draft is so deep. Yeah. I think there's going to be plenty of guys, including probably Josh Palmer, that will end up getting pushed back just because of the depth there.
It also noted, and this is their opinion, six of the top seven wide receivers in the draft are from the SEC, which overshadowed Josh Palmer. So that was the opinion of the person that wrote that. All right, a couple of basketball notes. Missouri's Xavier Pinson is selected to go to LSU, which is losing a whole lot. Pinson averaged 13.6 points per game for Konzo Martin. Does that surprise you he's going to LSU? Or that he's leaving Missouri in the first place?
Well, yeah, that getting past that, then no, but that surprised me that he was leaving there. I mean, just, you know, the guys that are in that group, I think, have seem to have a good culture and connection with Konzo Martin. But you just never know everybody's individual situation. But no, LSU was definitely going to be in the transfer market, and that did not surprise me that once he decided to go that he ended up there. The SEC, Jimmy, is loading up on these transfers around the country.
They sure are. Absolutely. You're right about that. We talked yesterday about Florida's now got four they have signed from the transfer portal, and I'm sure Tennessee will end up with two, three more along the way too. South Carolina, Frank Martin, he's got a two-year contract extension, did not get a pay raise. LSU guard Javonte Smart is declared for the NBA draft. He is hiring an agent. He has announced that on Instagram, so he will be leaving. Good thing for Tennessee. Man, was he a thorn in their side. He always seemed to play well against the Vols. With the anticipation of a one-time transfer rule where you can be eligible wherever you go, I wonder how they're going to handle it. And I heard Josh and Heather talking about this. So you got a guy named Mike McClung with Texas Tech who transferred from Georgetown. So he's at Texas Tech. Now he wants to transfer again. Is he going to be able to fit under the one-time transfer rule? Or are they going to say, nope, he's already transferred, he doesn't fit? Of course, now if he's graduated, which I don't know that he has, he could be the grad transfer. But going back to this, if he hasn't graduated, do you think the NCAA with the one-time transfer is going to grant immediate eligibility to those that have already transferred?
Gosh, I mean, there's plenty of things I want to be pro-athlete on. I'm not sure if you've already bounced once or twice and moved schools that you suddenly get a clean slate to do it again. I think the purpose of this rule would be to free up those that do want to change their situation that have not done so and felt like they were locked in. Mm-hmm. And the one-time transfer rule should give you the freedom to fix a maybe mistake or a change in coaches that didn't fit your skill set, things like that. But my guess is that the NCAA would make it clean across the board and just say, all right, from here on in, everybody gets to do it one time, and not say, if you already done it, then you don't count for this. I think they would take a lot of backlash. Who knows if that does ultimately change your mind, but I would think they would just make it clean across the board for everybody.
I don't think they will, but it's so hard to predict the NCAA. I don't even know why I'm trying. But
right. Or asking me to do it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'll ask you. I don't want to do it. I'll throw that in your lap. So anyway, we'll see what happens with that situation. All right, just a couple other notes. I thought this was kind of interesting. Carolina's coach, Matt Rhule, said that Carolina, with the number 8 pick, still might take a quarterback, even though they've got Sam Darnold and they got Teddy Bridgewater signed for another year. Is he throwing smoke out there? Do you think there's any way they would take a quarterback at number 8?
Is there any way? I suppose. I would not. I would think he is just – he's not being truthful, and he wants people to think they take a quarterback so someone will move up to try to get one and from them. I think it would be dumb for them to do so. Especially with what they invested in draft picks. Their entire draft last year was defense. they still need to get weapons around Sam Darnold, improve the line of scrimmage. I think that would be a huge mistake if they did it. And I tend to think that, yes, they are trying to draw up a quarterback target position for the market rather than just to plan on doing it. But, man, it's so hard to say when people fall in love with a certain guy, and maybe it's not even the coach. Maybe it's the GM or owner. It's just who knows.
The only way I can see that happening is, let's just say, for example, hypothetically, they love Justin Fields, and Fields is there at number 8, which means you're going to probably have to deal Bridgewater and or Darnold, somebody, if you're going to go in that direction with Fields. But other than that, again, they have to really love this guy. They would probably have to rate him as a number 2 or 3 quarterback in the draft before they would go that route. So we'll see. All right, a couple of other notes out there. Steph Curry, NBA note, 53 points. I saw this, and I thought this was pretty interesting. That's his 7th game where he scored at least 50 points and had at least 10 made threes. He's done that 7 times. Nobody else has done it 3 times. A pretty remarkable stat. Golden State ended up beating Denver, and Curry set the Golden State all-time scoring record. He broke Wilt Chamberlain's Warriors scoring record. He now is the 4th player to lead his franchise in points, assists, and 3-pointers made. That's rare company to see a player do that. All right, a couple of quick notes. The Lady Vols in tennis, they'll close out their regular season against Texas A&M. It's a makeup match. They're going to play that tomorrow. Lady Vols under Allison Ojeda, they're 14-6, 8-4 in SEC play. And they're led by Daria Kuzar, a junior transfer from Pepperdine, who's won 9 in a row. And then Johan Silva, 7-1 in SEC play. So Lady Vols taking on Texas A&M. And then after that, they play in the SEC tournament. All right, when we come back, we got a lot more coming your way. I mentioned that some of the folks we're going to hear from. We also have an opportunity later in the show to hear from Josh Heupel, Jabari Small, as well. So we'll try to bring that to you. And if you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. A couple other notes. Vanderbilt women's basketball, they've hired Shay Ralph. She's 43. She was a star at Connecticut. She has been a part of 13 Final Fours. She was an assistant at UConn for 14 years. She was a National Player of the Year in 2000. So Vanderbilt hiring Shay Ralph from UConn. And also, Julian Edelman retiring from New England. We mentioned this yesterday, 620 catches in his career, and a seventh round pick from Kent State. He's 2nd on the Patriots list in catches to Wes Welker. 118 playoff catches is 2nd only to Jerry Rice. And certainly a tremendous career, considering in particular he was a 7th round draft pick. Kind of a messy situation with Walter McCarty. So he got fired over a year ago as the head coach at Evansville when he was accused of sexual assault. There has been a lawsuit now filed against him and the school. McCarty says that the woman is telling vicious lies for financial gain, but she is suing McCarty and she is suing the school. So I don't know any more details than that. Eastern Michigan hiring Stan Heath. He's a former head coach at Arkansas. Also, he'd been at Kent State and South Florida, led each of those teams in the NCAA tournament. East Carolina getting a forward, Jaden Gardner, who has picked Virginia. He was a first-team All-AAC selection, averaging over 18 points and 8.3 rebounds per game. The Knoxville News Sentinel had their high school basketball honor their teams from this area, and they selected Blue Kane and B.J. Edwards of Catholic, Reed Satterfield of Greenville, Jacoby Gillespie of Greenville. You also had Jonathan Milloway of Oak Ridge, Trey Morrow from Scott. And on the girls' side, it was Danae Fritz of Maryville, Zinya McLaughlin out of Bearden, Kamara Mitchell-Steen of Oak Ridge, Campbell Penland of Northview Academy, Avery Strickland of Farragut, Avery Treadwell of Bearden. The coach of the year on the girls' side, Travis Maines of Catholic, who led them to the state tournament, made a really, really nice run this past year. Coach of the year on the boys' side was Brad Woosley of Greenville, who led that team to a state championship. All right. In Tennessee baseball taking on Western Carolina, Vince, I do want to get your take on this. The baseball team has been ranked as high as number three in a couple of polls, number four, number five. Has this team surprised you as how good it is, considering they don't have Garrett Crochet and Alex Solari from last year's team?
I'd say a little bit, Jimmy. They actually haven't even played, I think, up to the potential of all of their roster. The results have been there because I think they have an it factor and a connectivity to them, and they're so well coached, and Tony Vitello seems to make so many of the right decisions in game, whether it's pitching changes or different moves, dropping down the bunt. They're just so connected that they have a lot of the intangibles to overcome the fact that maybe some of their veterans like Pavloni and Ferguson and Lipsius don't have the highest batting average. Russell, they don't have the highest batting average, but they do so many other winning things that they have actually outplayed what maybe some of their stats are. So the results have maybe outperformed that, but I thought this team would take another step from what we last saw them. But they look like they've taken what would be two steps from when we last saw them in a full SEC schedule from 2019. Maybe they are taking the natural progression from what they would have done last year. And maybe this is just that next step with this group now in 2021. Another thing is they haven't had a healthy team. They haven't had Jackson Leith, who's maybe their most talented arm. He's a guy that passed on real money for the MLB draft and decided to come back to try to win an SEC championship, and he's lost for the season, which is such a shame because I think that would take them to another level as contenders for, you know, the College World Series and doing some damage there. But yeah, I think the results are a little bit higher than what I thought, but there's also a lot more room for them to be even better, which is kind of scary / exciting for a lot of people.
It is. Hey, let's go to the phones where Tony is our first caller. Tony, you're on Sports Talk.
Hey, Jimmy and Vince. How y'all doing?
Doing fine, Tony.
Good, Tony.
I just wanted to ask you if you know of any basketball players, transfer players, or anybody that Tennessee might be in on it and strongly considering Tennessee since we lost so many players on the current team. And I just hang up and listen to you.
Tony, the two or three that I knew that they were in on, like Walker Kessler, and I guess one of them, he's picked Auburn, another guy picked Kentucky. I don't know how strong they are on other players at this point. Vince, are you? Do you know?
Well, no. Like you, the guys that I think were highest on Tennessee going after have taken gone other places. Walker Kessler was one, even though it was thought that if he was going anywhere, be it Auburn or Gonzaga at the top of his list from the get-go, but that didn't stop Tennessee from pursuing him and him being listed in some stories as Tennessee in his group of high consideration. Another one is Noah Gurley from Furman, who ended up going to Alabama.
Right.
That's another guy that Tennessee was after, and the Vols were on the short list there. So a number of those guys have gone elsewhere, so I don't know if they've sort of reset the market. Oh, another one was Liam Robbins, a 7-footer from Minnesota. He's picked Vanderbilt. So I think there's some other guys that are out there. I don't know whether they've all, whether all of them have found new destinations. But there are a couple of guys play from Indiana and Wisconsin, a few others that have to look into to see if they've found new landing spots, but the ones at the top have all seemed to go elsewhere.
There was a player in Indiana that played at UT Martin, and he made himself available, and then I think he ended up going back to Indiana.
Parker Stewart.
Yes.
That's who it was.
The coach's
yep.
son. That's right.
Yep.
So, yeah. So I don't know of many names out there either that Tennessee's right in the thick of in terms of the transfer portal. But Tony, we appreciate the phone call. Let's hear from Jabari Small, Tennessee running back. He's had a really good camp from all indications. Coach is very impressed with him. He's a guy that now he wasn't able to go do much of the Saturday practice, but he's a guy that has been a leader for Tennessee so far. The coaching staff really raving about him. He met with the media via Zoom recently. Here are comments from Jabari Small.
Jabari, you kind of, you know, got a little bit of work last year, but you've drawn so much praise this spring. What, you know, what do you feel like you're doing that's allowing you to draw this praise from the coaching staff? And just kind of take me through your mentality as a guy that was last year kind of one that just kind of got some reps, but now, you know, looked at as kind of the guy early on.
Mm-hmm. Well, early on, even when the coaches first came here, I just tried to be a great person. You know what I mean? Just try to harp on the little things. Do everything right. And I think this coaching staff, they do a good job of just creating relationships outside of the football program. I've known Coach Mack before he got here. He's from Memphis. We from the same area. So I think it was just relationships that were already formed. And this spring, I just feel like I just tried to work on some things that I thought I was weak at last year as far as protection, running more physical. Getting accustomed to the speed of the game. So I just feel like just me knowing my weaknesses from last year and just getting better at those.
Yeah, Jabari, what did you think when you see Eric leave, you see Ty leave, and you sort of look around and you know, you're the guy that's the most experienced guy left?
Next man up, even with the last staff, even in football in general, it's the next man up mentality. I wish those guys the best. They were great leaders for me. They taught me a lot. But I take it as a challenge. You don't want to run away from a challenge. So,
hey, Jabari, we talked to Coach Mack yesterday, and he said that you were born to be a running back. So how long have you been playing running back? Has it been something you've been doing all your life? I know you had a couple, I think, uncles that were wide receivers in the SEC. Have you always been a running back, or is that something that's maybe a little bit more recent?
I've always been a running back. That's like the first position I played. My dad, my uncles, my two uncles, they played in the SEC. They were all SEC wide receivers. I just always grew up around a game of football. You know, I always wanted to play in the SEC, and my running back is just natural. That's just my position. So I played it for a while.
What do you think makes you a natural at it?
My vision, and I harp on not letting the first man tackle me, really. So,
hey, Jabari, you know, something fans really admired about the way you ran the ball last year is you run hard. You know, lean forward. You try to get every yard you possibly can get. Do you pride yourself? And maybe when you lack in stature, you just try to make up for running the ball hard. And also, how are you adjusting to this new scheme early on here in spring?
Well, I definitely think I have to run with a chip on my shoulder, not being the biggest running back. I have to separate myself somehow. So I definitely try not to let the first man tackle me. And as far as this new scheme, it's amazing. We're moving the ball very fast. We're catching the defense off guard sometimes. You know, as long as we execute and buy into what the coaches are doing, I think we'll be fine this year.
Jabari, Coach Mack talked about the finer details and how that's what he's been harping to you all this spring. From the players' perspective, what does that look like in terms of Coach Mack harping on the finer details to you all?
From the simple things like footwork, eye discipline, reads, having the right track, ball security, just the little things, the smaller things that make you a good player from a great player, or losing games from winning games. So I feel like he's doing a great job of making us watch film. Watching film is another thing. Just being very detailed so we can all become complete players as a whole running back room to get this team a spark next year.
Jabari, you know, when you found out, if you could take me back to when you found out that Josh Heupel was going to be your head coach, how long did it take you to sort of start YouTubing some UCF games and trying to figure out what that offense was? And what were your first impressions of watching how quickly they go and the points and everything?
I did my research very quickly. I loved what I saw from when I researched his offense from his past teams. I was just anxious to get ready to meet him. You know what I mean? And it's definitely, he's an offensive mastermind. So it's an honor to be able to play for him and his staff.
Hey, Jabari, what's the relationship been like going back, you know, winter workouts last season? How is it coming along with the offensive line and the running back group? How are those meetings going and just trying to build up a group for you to run behind?
The offensive line, they're very hard workers. They're great people. They're fun to be around. They're so smart, and I feel like me just having a year under my belt now, just understanding how blocks will develop in college ball. You know what I'm saying? Being patient in my runs and having that relationship with the O-line, I feel like it's going to be great for us.
Jabari, give me a little scouting report on a couple of the new running backs in your room, Tyon Evans and Jalen Wright. Talk about skill sets and what you see from those guys.
I'll start with Jalen. Jalen, he's a very athletic running back. He's very fast. He's strong. He's getting used to the college game speed, but it's just going to come with time and more reps. He's going to be a great running back here. And Tyon Evans, he's a very physical running back. I haven't seen him in spring ball yet. I'm very excited to see what he does. But he's going to be a great player. He has all the tools from pass blocking to running you over to running past you. So they're two great running backs.
Jabari, with, you know, seven practices in, what do you see from your unit, you know, developing, you know, how you guys see the progression through all those practices you guys been working through all, you know, for the past couple of days?
I definitely see us playing faster, knowing what the coaches want, understanding how to practice under the coaches. Just the speed that we play with, we're getting better every practice, and you can tell. It's just finding that chemistry, whether it's the running backs and the protection or the wide receivers and the quarterback. It just takes time, and I feel like we're getting there. We're taking some big strides this spring.
Hey, Jabari, two quick things. Just first, what are your thoughts on Coach Mack and sort of adjusting to his style so far? What do you like about him, and what are the differences there that stand out? And you mentioned the scheme. Do you feel like this scheme is a better fit for you in some ways, or how is that kind of – has this change benefited you in some ways because it maybe plays to your strengths a little better?
First, Coach Mack is a great person. He's a very detailed coach. He's very honest. He's very honest with us, and he lets us know what we need to work on. And he also praises us on things we do well. So he's just a great all-around coach. I relate to him well because we're from the same area. And as far as his offense, I feel like this offense is great for anybody. You know what I mean? It's very fast. Our receivers are split out wide, so it gives us a lot of vertical open seams. So I feel like this offense – could help any running back or receiver or quarterback. It's just a great offense to be in all around.
Jabari, talk about that mesh point with you guys doing those RPOs at the quarterbacks, kind of riding you at the hip a little bit more. How much of an adjustment will that be? Talk about that aspect of the game.
I feel like that's just going to take time and reps. It's definitely something to get used to, but it's something new. You should want to learn more things to do in the game to become a complete player. Riding a mesh point and transitioning right into a pass protection block is definitely different. But I feel like this spring allows us to just get better at the things we're not good at. So I think we'll be fine there too.
Tennessee running back Jabari Small. Vince, what are your expectations of Small this season?
Well, I wish we would have got a chance to see him on Saturday. We did not. And he has been praised by everybody, including, as you heard the questions there, by running back coach Jerry Mack and his teammates as well. But I think it's still running back by committee, Jimmy. I think there are quite a few really good options in that running back room right now. So I think he will be in the mix. I think he's definitely going to be, one of the top three or four. It's very encouraging for him in his playing time that he is really good in pass protection. That's your route to get on the field. Is pass pro, but he can run routes, he can catch the ball out of the backfield, running tough. This is going to be a power running team, only they're going to spread defenses out. So I think there's definitely going to be a role for him, and he will be one of those backs, but I think it's still by committee right now, and he's in that group.
Let's go to the phones where our next caller is Roger. Roger, you're on Sports Talk.
Hi, Jamie. Hey, Vince. How y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing great. Thank you. Hope you are as well.
Doing well, Roger. Good to hear from you.
Well, you too, Vince. I want to ask you both this question to y'all. I got the question for y'all. First, I want to ask you first, Vince. I know Tennessee's kind of gap with Ford and Georgia right now, but as a talent, I just want to ask you what does he have to do for the gap? Why? I know Pruitt said last year, but that's why I asked you about the gap. Or compete with Ford and Georgia again. What does he have to do to close the gap on Ford and Georgia?
Well, I think first thing they have to do is really get more out of this roster than what the previous coaching staff did last year. And even if it's not an ideal fit with their personnel to what they ultimately, want to do, they've got to find a way to develop players and at least have some good starting points and try to have a successful season that can at least give them an opportunity to shut some people up with the negative recruiting out there that I'm sure they're having to overcome. And then the recruiting is going to have to start coming around, and those results can help them with that. But I think they're going to ultimately need to get talented players that fit their scheme, and including high-level defenders. And I know that the defensive stats are not, with this kind of offense and the way college football is today, you're not going to get shut down dominant defenses really anymore, not in this league or in major college football. But you still need elite defenders that can help you turn the ball over, make some key stops on third down or in critical situations. But you got to have the stud players to have the ability to rise up and do that from time to time, even if your overall defensive stats aren't great. So I think they got to develop first, then start to recruit, and then land those elite players. And then, you know, once they get it rolling, then I think it will be easier and easier to get people here. And then obviously we have to see what is out there in terms of any sort of NCAA issues they deal with. They may make some progress in those things, Roger, but if they are short on scholarships or, you know, postseason ban, that's going to really slow that catching up process down. So we'll see how that plays out.
Right. Jimmy, I just want to ask you about for recruiting wise, Jimmy. About recruiting the staff. I haven't heard about the staff wise. Jimmy, have you heard about the staff? Have you heard how they're doing for recruiting players right now? Have you heard how they're doing? The staff doing so far for like Josh? How Josh doing for recruiting wise?
Roger, we appreciate the phone call. Thank you. One of the concerns that they don't have any commitments, and so it's really hard to evaluate. Vince mentioned the negative recruiting they're facing, and they've got the NCAA cloud hanging over their head. It's really hard. I think they've made some inroads with some in-state players, but, gosh, you don't have any. I think they're the only program in the league that doesn't have a commit at this point, so it's really hard to evaluate where they are. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. When we come back, we're going to be joined by a sports attorney. Looking forward to visiting with Dan Lust. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Farrar, Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.